This morning, we're not talking about that. We are talking about superheroes. And this is the last one of the series. We've had five of these. And this time, we're just going to be talking about just being you. Superheroes. We're all holding out for a hero. As who was that? Was that Bonnie Tyler? Holding out. Oh, don't know. Was it Hazel Dean?
No, Bonnie Tyler.
Bonnie Tyler. Showing your age, Mark. Bonnie Tyler. Okay.
My parents' collection.
From their vinyl. Their vinyl collection. Okay. So we're all holding out for a hero, and there are some great heroes. I heard a story about a hero. Muhammad Ali, I think, is an amazing guy, an incredible guy who did amazing things, not only in the boxing ring, but outside of it in terms of what he stood for. One of my favorite stories about him is that he was on a plane, and the usual announcement came up on the tannoy. So we're just about to take off, ladies and gentlemen. Please fasten your seatbelts and put your trays in the upright position. And everybody was doing that. And the stewardess noticed Muhammad Ali didn't move a muscle when the announcement came. So she waited a moment, thought maybe he hasn't heard it, said it again. He still didn't move. So she went over to him and she looked him in the eye and said, Mr. Ali, because everybody knew who he was on this plane. Mr. Ali, I'm afraid we can't take off until you put your seatbelt on. Could you just do that? And then we'll get going. And he looked at her and he said, Superman don't need no seatbelt. Superman don't need no seatbelt. And in quick as a flash, this air hostess looked back at him and said, that's fine, Mr. Ali, but Superman doesn't need a plane either. Put your belt on. Now, we've been thinking about what makes a hero. What does it take to be a hero? And most of us don't wake up thinking we are one. We've been challenging that and saying, actually, you can be a hero. You can be a hero in other people's lives so easily if you choose to be. Being a hero isn't actually about thinking, a bit like Muhammad Ali. It's not about thinking you are better than you actually are. You know, Superman, I don't need a seatbelt. It's not about that. It's not about thinking you're better than you are. Heroes, we've said, are about this. Heroes are people who see what everybody else sees, but they choose to do what nobody else does. Isn't that true? And we talked about the Ariana Grande concert where the homeless guy, a homeless guy outside there, when everybody was running out, he ran in and dragged two people out. That's a hero. They see what everybody else sees, but they don't do what everybody else does. Heroes save the day, and you know that. They save the day in very easy, simple ways. Heroes save your day. People who've done things for you have saved your day often, and heroes always save the day in ordinary but wonderful ways. And heroes always sacrifice. We talked about that last week. That's the bit we don't like. They always sacrifice. A hero is someone who has laid something down for your sake. They gave something up to bless and help you. And we look up at people, don't we, who have done that in our lives and who have done that for us. We go to movies and we burst into tears over it when we see someone sacrifice for somebody else. And that's what a hero does. Here's another characteristic of heroes, and this is what we're going to talk about this morning. Heroes use what they have for other people. Heroes use what they have for others. Mother Teresa was once interviewed by a BBC reporter. He followed around for a whole day, but this BBC reporter was an atheist. Didn't believe there was even a God, let alone anything else. And at the end of the day, having seen all that she did and the people she would just be alongside and hold their hand and hug them and be close to them. And he said, look, I know you're doing a great job, but I can't believe there is a God because I look at all the suffering around us and I can't believe that there is a God who would allow that sort of stuff. So I'm an atheist. And her reply, this little old lady who looked him in the eye, this BBC international reporter, she looks him in the eye and she says, don't you go blaming poverty on God. Poverty exists because God's children refuse to share. Isn't that true? There's plenty in the world. I have more than I ever needed. I have more than I could ever use. And poverty exists because God's people refuse to share. That's why poverty exists. It's not his fault, it's ours. And she's a hero because she used what she had, and she didn't have very much, but she used it for others. And she didn't own very much, but even with nothing, she changed so many people's lives, and her name is a household name today. A hero is someone who uses what they have, doesn't keep it for themselves, but uses it for others. There's a story in the Bible that is all about that, really, about how to be a hero like that. It's a very familiar story. If you find a Bible in front of you, you turn to Luke chapter 9. So if you've got a Bible, you don't have to. I'll read it to you. But Luke chapter 9 and verse 10. And it's a story about the disciples who once got blindsided by Jesus, as he often did. He would turn to them and floor them a little bit. And this is one of those where they didn't think they could be heroes. And he said, I think you can. Luke chapter 9, verse 10. So it's second half of your Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, first four books of the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. And you'll find Luke, the third one there. So this is what it says, Luke 9, verse 10. When the apostles returned, they'd just been sent out by Jesus to be heroes. They'd just been sent out and they were amazed at what God did with them, using them. When they returned, they told Jesus everything they'd done. Then Jesus slipped quietly away with them towards the town of Bethesda. But the crowds found out where he was going and they followed him. He welcomed them and he taught them about the kingdom of God and he healed those who were sick. And late in the afternoon, the 12 disciples came to him and they said, look, send the crowds away to the nearby villages and farms so they can find food and lodging for the night. There's nothing to eat in this remote place. And I love this next bit. Look at this. Jesus said, you feed them. What? You feed them. Isn't that great? In another account, it says, he said this to test them. Yeah, right. I think he did. I think most of them knew that something was going on. They did what we would do. I mean, after the service today, we've got a picnic lunch. Have you noticed that? We don't forget that. It's picnic lunch afterwards. The sun is now out, which is a nice change. And imagine if we get to the picnic lunch and everybody turns up and nobody's got any sandwiches. And I turn to you like Jesus did and said, Steve, you feed them. You'd probably look at me as if I'd gone mad. You'd probably head straight for the corner shop and say, have we got a budget for this? What are we going to do? They panic. They do what I would do if somebody suddenly turned to me with a massive job that I am not prepared for. Whoa! They panic. This is what they say. Oh, no, it's not on there. This is what they say. We've only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. Or are you expecting us to go and buy enough food for this whole crowd? For there were 500 men. That was just the men. And the women wanted something to eat too, and so did the kids. That was just the men. 5,000 people were on that hillside on that day. But you discover this throughout the gospel. You discover this. Jesus makes this beautiful invitation to all of us over and over and over again. He says to you and me, you feed them. You do it. You do it. This is what it means to be the hands and feet of Jesus. That's what it means. To represent him on the earth. It means you feed them. Get on with it. Go and do it. It probably reminded the disciples, when Jesus said this, it probably reminded them of another event in the Bible where somebody in a very similar set of circumstances to them had the same reaction they did when Jesus said this, when God asked them to do something. It's the story of Moses, and we talked about it in one of the series so far. The story of Moses, who is a great hero. He is a hero of the Israelite faith. And he tries to save God's people his way. Do you remember he tried to do that? So his way was, I know, I'll kill one of the slave drivers and I'll fight them to the death, you know. And that didn't work out so well. He finds himself miles away in hiding as a shepherd, just keeping his head down. He tried it his way. Didn't work out so well. Ends up meeting God, and God God instructs him that he has heard the oppression of Israel. I love that. You love that? God hears. God isn't deaf to it. We walk by sometimes, don't we? But God will not walk by. God hears. And he's heard the oppression of his people. And he says, Moses, you're the man. You are the one I want to send. Off you go. And Moses spends a lot of time after that, a whole chapter of the Bible, in fact, trying to convince God that he's got it wrong. I suspect halfway through this conversation where Moses is saying, no, 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 it's not me. No, no, think of someone else. No, I'm not good enough. No, I can't do it. No, I haven't got the skills. No, I haven't got, you really want someone else for this, God. I suspect halfway through the conversation, God had one thought in his mind. His one thought was probably this: why didn't I ask a woman? Yeah, that's controversial, boys, isn't it? But I'm serious. Have you ever noticed, if you read the Bible, whenever God approaches a woman in the Bible and says, will you do this, they never argue. Have you noticed? That's, come on, boys, this is bad news. That is really bad news. I mean, you look at any of them. Esther, in a royal court, under threat of death, does amazing things. She never argues about it. It's her idea, in fact. Ruth, who could go back to be with her own people, but decides to stick it out, and it changes. She becomes part of the lineage of Jesus. Deborah, the great judge, Deborah, who stood up and changed her country. And here's the best one, a little teenage girl who one day God turns up to and says, now here's the news. You're going to have a baby. It's not going to be from a man. It's going to be from God. God is going to give you a child. The child will be the Messiah, the long-awaited Savior of the world. And you're going to be pregnant out of wedlock in a culture that usually resolves these things with stones. How do you feel about that? You know what she said? Her name was Mary. She said, may it be to me as the Lord wishes. Moses, whole chapter of excuses. Boys, this is not good. We need to change this. We have too many excuses and the women are leading the way in. God says it, I'll do it. Okay? So, Moses, not so much. When God finally gets the past his why me questions, which are usually what you do when Jesus says something like that. Why me? Pick someone with a catering degree. You know, why me? When he gets past the why me ones, he starts asking the how questions. Well, okay, how? How am I going to do this? And that's what we do when God asks us to do something that we think we can't do. And God replies with a simple response. He says, God has this annoying habit of replying to questions with questions. Why? How am I going to do this? Well, what's in your hand? Says God to Moses. What's in your hand? What was in his hand? Well, it's a stick. A stick. A shepherd's staff. God says, that's perfect. We can work with a stick. Hang on, God. You want me to go up against the biggest superpower on the planet? And at that time, Egypt was the superpower on the globe. And Moses says, you want me to go up against Pharaoh with a stick? God says, that's great, we can use that, we can do that. The disciples had the same response. You feed them. What? You feed them. There's 5,000 people, the scale of the problem is huge. What are we going to do? Jesus says, I don't know, what have you got? That's literally what he does. He says, well, what have you got? What's in your hand? That's what he says to them. You see, the principle over and over in the Bible is heroes use what they have for others. Even though it may not be much, they use it for others. That's what makes them heroes. And that's a question that God is always asking us. What do you have? What do you have? You be the hero. How? Well, what's in your hand? What do you have? There's a wonderful story. I went to a Christian conference called Spring Harvest, where thousands of Christians gather every Easter down in Minehead and around the country. And there was a speaker there called Danielle Strickland. Have you ever heard of Danielle Strickland? Some of you? You might have done. She is a Salvation Army officer. She is in her about 30s or 40s now. But she was stationed all over the world. And her main remit, was just to combat some of the big problems in the world. No problem there. Just go to another country and do that. Would you mind, Daniel? That'll be fine. So that is what she did. She was stationed in Australia at one point, and part of her job was to combat sexual exploitation and human trafficking, which is going on in many of our countries, including ours. It's still happening today. Her job was to get women out of prostitution and out of the sex industry and to set them free, because often those industries came with a lot of strings attached for those women. Often it was institutionalized slavery for many of them. But that's really hard if you want to do that in Australia. That's the sort of you feed them question. What? You want me to do that? How am I going to do that? Because in Australia, the sex industry is legalized. So if you walk down an Australian town's high street, you'll find, I don't know, the 7-Eleven or the, you know, the corner shop, and then you'll have the laundrette, and then you'll have a brothel. No joke. It's legal in Australia. So the brothel will be next to these other shops. And she didn't know what to do. She thought, you feed them. Yeah, thanks, God. How am I going to deal with this need? How am I going to set people free? And one day she has this phone call. She has this phone call from a retired elderly Baptist lady who phones her up, and she said, her name was Jan, and she said, I have a bit of a problem. My phone number is only 2 digits different from the brothel's phone number down my street. You can imagine the phone calls I am getting. My husband got one the other day, and it was quite disturbing. So I decided I was going to change my phone number. So on the day I was going to change my phone number, I was having my quiet time. I was reading my Bible, spending a bit of time with God, and I distinctly heard God speak to me. He interrupted my quiet time, and Danielle said, well, that's very rude, isn't it, God interrupting you in the middle of your, you know, your Bible reading? What's he playing at? And she said, yeah, I know. And she said, well, he interrupted me, and I got the distinct sense God didn't want me to change my phone number. And I don't know why, but I got the feeling he didn't want me to do that. But I want to do something. So, Danielle Strickland, Salvation Army officer in charge of helping people in the sex industry or trapped in that industry, what do I do? And Danielle Strickland on the end of the phone is thinking, you know what, I've been here a year and I don't know. I don't know how we get in there. I don't know how we change this. You feed them. I don't know how to do this. But she did the usual, and if you're a Baptist minister, this is good advice, if you're ever in ministry or in management in any shape or form, is you do the Yoda trick, which is basically you just sort of respond with a question, problem you have. You know, you just do that. And that's what she did. So she said, yeah, you have a real problem there. That's difficult. Well, it's difficult. So they got together and they had a coffee and they were talking about this. And she said, well, what would you normally do, Jan, if there was a problem in your community? If somebody was in need in your community, which these people are, what would you do? And she said, well, I'd normally bake cupcakes. Right, said Danielle. That's it then. That's what we're going to do. She said, what? We're going to bake cupcakes. We're going to meet back here. Well, actually, you're going to bake cupcakes because I can't bake. So, Jan, you're going to bake a load of cupcakes. We're going to meet back here and we're going to take them around the brothel on Tuesday. Okay, says Jan. So they meet back on Tuesday. At this point, Jan has been interrupted again in her quiet time, and God has been talking to her. She said, Danielle, I know we decided to do this, and I'm quite scared about it, and I know you are, and we're going with fear and trepidation, but I think God said I need to do this on my own. This little retired Baptist lady, in her 70s, I think God is telling me to do this on their own. And that's really important, because Danielle said to her, no, but I'm the professional. I'm trained. I'm a professional. and I don't want anybody dying on my watch, so I'm coming with you. And Jan replied, yeah, I know you're professional, but I'm their neighbour. I'm their neighbour. You know what? And this is something churches really need to hear. A neighbour will trump a professional every single time. I can knock on as many doors as I want, but you know what? You are somebody's neighbour. And the fact that you live near them and that you care about them will say a hell of a lot more than somebody from an organisation, which is how people view me. Neighbour trumps professional every single time. You don't believe that. You think I can do it better than you can. Let me just add a word to that. Rubbish. Rubbish. Because neighbour trumps professional every single time. Right, in our family, Claudia decided she wanted to get to know our neighbours, and she's been doing all sorts of things to that. And I am the Baptist minister. They all know I'm the Baptist minister because they all know that that house that I live in is not my house, it's yours, and it's owned by the church. They know whoever's in there is the Baptist minister. So immediately I'm the professional to everybody down my road. And they all think I'm after their spiritual scalp most of the time. They do. They're very... No, they're great. I love our neighbours. We got past that. But you know how we got past that? My wife decided, you know what, I'm going to invite them round, and I'm going to invite all the ladies, because quite a lot of retired ladies in our close living alone. And she said, I'm going to invite everybody, all the ladies in the close round, on a Tuesday morning when she wasn't working. And now she's working, but she still does it occasionally. She did it about 2 weeks ago. And she said, she went to charity shops, bought a load of secondhand china, and stuck it on the table and made it, you know, girly in a way that... If I was doing it, it would just be a cake in the middle of, you know, it wouldn't be good, and a few paper napkins. But she made it look really good. And she does this, and she'd been doing this for quite a while. And they all turn up every time. And she's got some great friendships. They're not just, these are her friends now. These are her neighbours. And she has made more impact with our neighbours than I ever have. She has done that. She's not trained. She's been a Baptist minister's wife, yeah, but she's not trained. She's just like you. She's never gone to theological college. She's not. She's my wife. She's just like you. And she's made massive difference. We took two of them out the other week down to Knoll because they don't drive anymore. And we just took them down to Knoll for the day out. They loved it. This neighbor trumps professional every single time. I need you to hear that. You can be a hero. You can be a hero. So, back to Danielle Strickland and Jan, the retired Baptist lady. They knock on the door with the cupcakes. Danielle did go with her because she was really worried that this lady might not survive the process. And she didn't know what was behind that door. So she went with her. But Jan took the lead and she knocked on the door. And the door opens and the manager of the brothel looks at them and says... sees a retired Baptist lady with a tray of cupcakes and a Salvation Army officer on her doorstep. And she says, are you lost? Are you lost? It's really funny. And Jan, who is absolutely petrified, this little old lady, says, we brought cupcakes. And it's almost like, you know, that verse in the Bible that says, and all that, you know, our battle is not against flesh and blood, it's against the powers, the principalities, the dark forces in this world. It's like they all screamed spontaneously, ah, cupcakes, we're doomed. And because the manager just said, cupcakes, great, come in. And so they just strolled in. And Jan spent the next hour getting to know these girls' names, saying hello, welcoming them as their neighbour, apologised to them, said, you know what, you've been here a little while and I've never come and said hello. You're my neighbours. And I'm really sorry about that. And I'm coming back next Tuesday and I'll bring some more cake. And it'd be great to get to know you. Do you know what happened off the back of all that for Danielle Strickland? Off the back of that, within a year, there were 60 initiatives across the whole of Australia with using baked goods that got the Salvation Army and ordinary people into brothels and started to help, and through relationship with those girls got some of them out of what was a very exploitative system, out of that system and into a good and a safe life. Cupcakes. That's all it took. Wasn't a professional. All started by one retired grandma who did what? Who just used what she had for others. Cupcakes. A stick. A few loaves. And a few fish. This is the strategy. This is how you become a hero. You use what you have for others. Now, I used to think God used what I had in spite of me. Do you ever have that feeling? That God can use what I have, but he's having to cope with me in the process, and he's thinking, oh, well, we'll work round, Phil. You know, we'll just use what he's got. But that's not right. God doesn't just want to use what you have. He wants to use you. He doesn't want to use you in spite of you. He wants to use you because of you. He wants to use you. It's not in spite of, it's because of who you are that he's chosen you. And one Sam, our little Sam, when he was 5 years old, decided he wanted to do his birthday party. We say, what sort of party do you want? He said, I want a superhero party. Good man. He's starting the right way, I said. I was grooming him into being a geek, you see, so a bit like me. I love superheroes and all that sci-fi stuff. So he said, I want a superhero party. So fantastic. Okay. Now, at the time, we just started. We just left college. We were broke, flat broke. Everybody that he'd invited had gone to the Disney store and had dressed up in, you know, Batman, Iron Man, Superman. They'd bought all the pucker gear because we were in the posh part of Southend, Leigh-on-Sea, posh end. If there is no posh end of Southend, is there really? But it was the posh end of Southend. And we didn't have any money, so we said, well, Sam, we'll make you your costume. So we made him a costume. So he had a cape, bit of material for a cape, and he put his shorts over his trousers, as you do when you're a superhero. Don't ask me why. And he did that, and we made a mask for him, and we put a big S on his chest, Velcroed a big S to his chest. And we said, there you go, Sam, you're a superhero. Well, who are you? And I'll never forget what he said. He said, I'm Super Sam. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You are Super Sam. Our problem is we keep wanting to dress ourselves up. We keep wanting to do the next bit of training. We keep wanting to, you know, be more equipped. If I wait a little bit while and then I'll be dressed for the job and then I can do what God wants me to be a hero in someone's life. But I'll just get all that stuff done first, as if what you are now isn't enough. We're always waiting, but that isn't what God is looking for. God says this. I'm not doing it in spite of you. I'm doing it because of you and who you are now. So we now have this light shining in our hearts. That light is the good news about Jesus. It's the way we can serve people, the way Jesus served people, the way we can make a difference in the world, the way Jesus made a difference. Because he said, you will do greater things than I've done. He said that. So now we have this shining light in our hearts. But we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God, not from us. Do you see that verse says? It says God wants to use you not in spite of you, but because of you. He chose you because you're a fragile clay jar. He didn't want some perfect looking container. He wants you to look a bit beaten up and a bit unprepared and a little bit inadequate. He wants you to be that, because if you're not that, everybody thinks you did it. But if you are that, everybody knows God's done it. They couldn't have done this. They must have God with them. So it's not in spite of you, it's because of you that God chose you. And that's the strategy. Just you. just with what's in your hand, and him. Not in a month or 2 months' time when you've done the training. Now. That's enough to make you a hero to somebody else. You see, salvation has two parts. You all know this, but we forget the second part. You know salvation. Salvation is salvation from stuff. So it's, salvation is saved from guilt or fear or greed or hate or jealousy or sin. And we've been saved. We've been saved from stuff. But do you ever remember the fact that you have not only been saved from, you have been saved for something? Never forget that. You are not just saved from, you are saved for. Saved to respond to God's invitation. He's heard the cry of the oppressed and he said, you feed them. And he says, you and me, and whatever is in your hand, that's how you do it. I've always wondered about a verse in the Bible, and we'll close with this. There's a verse in the Bible that says this, continue to work out your salvation. I thought, that's not very Baptist. Paul couldn't have been a Baptist. Maybe he was a Roman Catholic, I don't know. But, you know, you feel you have to do stuff to get in good with God and to get saved and all that sort of stuff. You know, so if I do enough good stuff, God will let me in. God will be happy with me. That's not Christianity, to be honest. That's not Christianity at all. Christianity is, Jesus has done what needs to be done to get you in good with God. Full stop. You can't do anything else. He's done it. That's what the cross is all about. It is that powerful. He's paid the debt. He's cleared the ledger. He's made you in a right relationship with God. Job done. He's done all that. So I always thought, well, work out your salvation. Sounds like we have to do stuff in order to finish our salvation or to get the last bit sorted. That's not what it means. Do you know what that means? That means continue to work out why you've been saved. Because you've been saved from stuff, but you've also been saved for stuff. Why has he saved you? And he did choose you. Jesus said, you didn't choose me. I chose you. Have you ever worked out why Jesus chose you? Because you have something he wants. You are someone he wants. You have something in your hand he can use. Have you worked out what you are saved for, to do? I hope you have. Work out what you've been saved for. You say, I don't know what I've been saved for. And God says to you what he says to Moses. Okay, what's in your hand? What have you got that God can use? You start there. And you can answer that question. And it's not just the practical things like your car, which actually God can use. And he does sometimes, doesn't he? Or your house, and God can use that. Or your time, or your energy, but what about your character and your personality? Why is God, what is in your hand? What has he given you? Because heroes are people who use what they have for other people. What has God given you? And if you don't know the answer, what am I saved for? Just answer this. What do you have? What is in your hand? And as God uses what you are now and what you have now, it will demonstrate who God is and how much he loves people. Because the simple truth is this, heroes use what they have for other people. And that means you can all be heroes. There is no excuse. We can all be a hero to someone. That's the end of our series on heroes. And I hope you've changed your view. I hope you've stopped thinking a hero is somebody else. When God says, I picked you. You feed them. What's in your hand? Use that. You can save the day. You can see the need and not do what everybody else does. Do something better. you can be as someone who uses what they have for other people. I hope you'll be a hero. I hope you can do it today. You could do some of this stuff by the end of the day before the light fades. You can be a hero. I hope you will be. I hope you will be.